East London, England.
Scarred for life by the person she thought was a friend for life. 21-year-old Naomi Oni has undergone a series of skin grafts after acid was thrown over her just over a year ago. You don't see it on the CCTV, but you do see the moments before. Dressed in the niqab she bought for the attack is Naomi's former friend, Mary Konye. Walking up the station steps while Naomi walks away, completely unaware of her friend and a grudge about to be settled.
The haunting memory of a woman in a niqab will forever linger in Naomi Oni's mind. It was on December 29th, 2012, that her life changed irrevocably. As she walked home from work, she sensed a figure following her. Her unease turned into fear as she felt the presence drawing closer. And then, without warning, the acid hit her face with searing intensity. Naomi recalls the moment vividly, the cold eyes of the veiled figure staring into hers before the splash of acid and the burning sensation that left her gasping for air. She ran for her life, screaming for help as she reached her front door. It wasn't until her mother opened it that she realized the full extent of her injuries. The media was captivated by this shocking story, an acid attack targeting a young Victoria's Secret sales assistant. But as details emerged, doubts began to surface. Reports revealed that Naomi had researched acid attacks prior to the incident. Was this truly an act of violence or a desperate cry for attention gone wrong? Acid attacks have become increasingly prevalent in recent years, used by criminals for various purposes, including robbery and revenge. From delivery drivers to young club goers, many have fallen victim to this gruesome weapon. But on that fateful night in 2012, as Naomi made her way home from work, just days after Christmas, acid attacks were still considered rare. Little did she know that a black-clad woman was waiting to strike near her Dagenham home. And so begins the investigation into this heinous crime, one that would uncover chilling details about both victim and perpetrator. Was justice served, or was there more to the story? Only time would tell. Welcome to No Tears for Black Girls, a true crime podcast written and produced by award-winning author John Reed Berg. Make sure to hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel and follow us on all social media platforms. You can also download our episodes on the Alive Podcast app or stream them from your preferred platform. Get ready to hold your breath as we dive into the depths of darkness. Let's begin.
My face was black. My eyes were swollen. I was terrified.
This interview was recorded just over a month after the attack. At that time, she was unaware that the person who had done this to her was her friend.
That person failed. Whatever their aim was, they failed. And God has given me a life for a reason. That's what keeps me going.
The fact that the defendant was a friend really adds to the terrible nature of this incident, that someone that you would regard as a friend that could actually do this to you really is very chilling, I think.
Naomi's face still bears the scars of a brutal acid attack 11 years later. In an exclusive interview for a BBC documentary, she recalls the horror of her once beautiful face melting under the corrosive liquid. But despite this traumatic experience, Naomi has found it in her heart to forgive her attacker, a former friend consumed by envy. However, she still views them as callous and vindictive, while her romantic relationships have been affected. Her boyfriend at the time distanced himself during her recovery, revealing his shallow nature. And even after regaining her sight, Naomi had to come to terms with her new reflection and contemplate taking her own life. Swathed in bandages, she also grappled with the mystery of why she was targeted. As the beloved only child of a single mother with albinism, Naomi had never been wayward or troublesome before this senseless attack. But in the end, She chose to survive and use her story to bring awareness to the fatal consequences of acid attacks. Naomi's world was shattered when she became the victim of a vicious attack. She had it all: a loving family, a promising career as a makeup artist, and a devoted boyfriend. But on that fateful night in December 2012, everything changed. As she worked her shift, little did she know that someone was watching her every move. Mary Cogne, a supposed friend, had been secretly plotting her downfall for months. As Naomi chatted with her boyfriend on the phone, she suddenly felt a presence looming over her. And before she could even process what was happening, acid was being poured onto her skin. In a state of shock and confusion, she fled to her family, who were horrified at the sight before them. As they raced against time to save her from the devastating effects of sulfuric acid, one question burned in their minds: why? But as the truth unraveled, it became clear that this was not an act of random violence, but a calculated revenge plotted by someone close to Naomi. And from that moment on, life would never be the same for Naomi or her loved ones. The days that followed were a hazy blur. Naomi, heavily medicated with morphine, was transferred from London's Whitechapel Hospital to the specialized burns unit at Broomfield Hospital in Essex. She recalls snippets of conversation about corrosive substances and severe burns while drifting in and out of consciousness. As her sight slowly returned, she saw glimpses of her reflection in her phone and was horrified by the charred, unrecognizable face staring back at her. "No one is ever going to marry me now," she thought. Naomi underwent multiple skin grafts and surgeries to reconstruct her face. She struggled to come to terms with the fact that the perpetrator was someone she had considered a friend, who had even feigned concern after the attack. Looking back, Naomi realizes there were warning signs of Mary's troubled and manipulative nature. But she had always been understanding and forgiving, having also experienced bullying herself. It wasn't until police asked if anyone had threatened to throw acid at her that Naomi remembered Mary's seemingly innocent threat during an argument 2 years prior. She had dismissed it, unable to believe that her friend could be capable of such a heinous act. In February 2013, just a month after the attack, Naomi celebrated her 21st birthday with a small party, a bittersweet reminder of the normal life that was taken from her. Mary arrived at the party in a provocative outfit, flaunting her body shamelessly. It was a direct affront to Naomi, who had requested everyone to be happy and not cry for her on her birthday. However, Mary ignored this request and even wrote a card with the words, "Happy birthday, beautiful," while crying on the arm of Naomi's chair. Little did anyone know, but Scotland Yard's homicide squad was already investigating Mary's involvement in the acid attack on Naomi. Through CCTV footage, they discovered that Mary had carried a handbag identical to the one she brought to her police interview, which was eventually found with traces of sulfuric acid on it. This crucial evidence led to Mary's eventual imprisonment for 12 years. In court, Mary tried to deflect blame by claiming that Naomi had attacked herself for attention and fame. But finally, she confessed to her heinous crime, driven by obsession and jealousy towards Naomi's looks. Despite the physical and emotional scars from the attack, Naomi remains resilient and refuses to let the tragedy define her. She has completed a course in makeup, and although she has faced rejection from many job opportunities, she continues to fight. But even amidst her bravery and determination, there are moments when Naomi feels sad for what could have been if she was never attacked. Looking back at old photos, she sees an innocent girl with big dreams and aspirations for making her family proud. She admits that there are still days when she is unhappy, but she reminds herself that great things can happen too, just like how something catastrophic changed her life in seconds. Naomi also shares that after the attack, she believed no man would ever want her, but now she knows that the right person will see beyond her scars and value her for who she truly is. Her radiant smile speaks volumes of the strength and resilience within her. A woman who knows that whoever marries her will be lucky to have her.
I was 12 when I met this friend, and we both went to the same secondary school. Our relationship grew, but it was also very toxic. Certain signs and things that she did, I should have looked out for. She would just berate me sometimes and say really horrible things. When I was in school as a teenager, I was quite shy. So I kind of didn't like confrontation. I tried my best not to be argumentative. And with her, she had a very weird way of being. Other girls noticed that she was quite begrudgeful. It was something that a lot of girls wanted to stay away from. If I was her friend, I did not want to be on the bad side of her. As we were teenagers, her family were quite strict, so she wasn't always allowed out. So I had a lot of other friends, and I was quite popular in my school year. And sometimes in the classroom, when I would be laughing with my friends, she would just send me over a blank stare, a threatening stare even. I had people warn me. I had people also laugh at her. They used to say she was like copying me, that she wanted to be like me and stuff like that. So like, they used to say like she was quite obsessed. When people would express this to me, I would always say, you know, she's my friend. I would always defend her and say we're friends. There was a slow separation in our friendship, and at this point I was 18. We were studying at different places. We just didn't see much of each other. And I had a boyfriend, and she sent him a really horrible text, just saying a lot of horrible things about me. When I heard that it came, the text was from Mary, I remember texting her saying, I don't know why you sent this text message. It was just no need for her interference in my relationship, and it was just a new relationship. She didn't know much about it, so she was just trying to ruin things for me. And that was the first sign I saw that something was wrong. So I confronted Mary about the messages. We argued. It was quite a bitter argument. And then I didn't speak to her for about a year. And she called me one day and she was like, hello. And I was like, who is it? And she was like, it's Mary. And I was like, oh, Mary, how are you? I wasn't angry anymore. I was now in a new relationship, so I had a new boyfriend. So I was just over the past. And she had said to me, you know, I was so angry with you, I wanted to throw acid in your face. She was angry at me because I think for the first time in our friendship, I really gave her what she was giving me back. And I think it was years of like a lot of insults and just berating me that I just all put together, and I just kind of like let go in that instance and just kind of went off on her. After she told me that, I was like, you know, if someone was to do that to me, they're going to prison, right? Like, that's not possible. And she was just like, you know, oh, you know, she was just joking, that she didn't really mean it. And then we went on to just kind of say sorry to each other, forgive each other, and like move on. She came to see me one day, actually, when I was working in Victoria's Secret in Stratford Westfields. I was kind of becoming again really popular, and I had my boyfriend. So the day that it happened, I was getting ready for work. I had a late shift. I remember going to Stratford and just feeling like, oh, the day's gonna be short, it's gonna be over and done with, and before you know it, I'll be back home. And then on my way home, as I was getting off the bus to cross the road to go home, I was on the phone to my boyfriend while I was on the bus. And that's when I saw someone in a niqab. She was wearing all black and she had like a black covering, so I didn't recognize it was her. And as I was about to cross the road, I just felt a huge splash. And I was screaming. I remember I was screaming, screaming, screaming. My skin was burning. I still have the scars here.
obviously on my face, some on my chest. I just remember running to my door, screaming. And then my mum opened the door and I just saw the whole house, my whole family's face just dropped. I remember running upstairs, taking off my lashes, taking off my clothes, having to go in the bath. My godmother had to like rinse me, throw so much water on me. My mum was calling the ambulance. My cousins were all around me in the bathroom, like, you know, put her in the bath, throw water on her. And I remember I was just shivering, making noises, just like, who would do this to me? Am I ugly? No one's ever gonna marry me. I'm ugly now, no one's ever gonna marry me. The ambulance came and I was rushed straight to the hospital. I just remember being sat down on like a wheelchair and then on a chair and them having to pour like this huge shower of cold water on me, freezing cold as my flesh is literally being burnt. I was in the hospital for a month. I had to have surgeries on my face. So the first layer, my skin had been burnt third degree. So they had to take off all the burnt skin and replace it with skin from my thigh and put it on my face and put it on my scars. The acid had burnt my eyelids, so it had got into both my eyes and burnt off this eyelid, and I had to have skin from behind my ear removed to create an eyelid. Initially, I thought someone was out to kill me. So while I was in hospital, I was feeling like I just missed a lucky shot, like I was very lucky to be alive. So I'm just gonna troop this through until we find out who did it. At the time, I didn't know who had done it. I didn't know who it was until the police had told me that Mary was the one underneath the niqab. Basically, the bag she wore that day, she brought to the police station when being questioned, and from there on they searched her home and found evidence that it was her. I had left the hospital, and when I found out that it was Mary that had done it, I basically couldn't eat and speak for about 3 days. I was in such shock, in utter shock. I couldn't say anything. Mary was sentenced to 12 years and she had to do 6. So she's out now. When I found out it was her, it shocked me, because after the attack, I had a surprise birthday party for my 21st birthday. So my ex-boyfriend threw me a surprise birthday party. I, at the time, had no eyelids. I could barely walk because of my skin graft, but I went. And Mary showed up, knowing that she was the one that had done it. Mary showed up. At this point, I didn't know that she was there, and she was there pretending to cry. And I was rubbing her back saying, "Don't worry, I'll be okay. Don't cry. I finally connected the dots and I realized that she really meant what she said and she did it. So like, I can only wonder what was going through her mind. She obviously was very jealous of me, which was something that I didn't really pick up on. I didn't notice. I just thought she's kind of outlandish with everyone. So this is just her kind of personality. And then obviously when all said and done and she did what she did, I was like, oh wow, she was really jealous. This is the ultimate betrayal. I used makeup as a way to move on. It really helped me just restore the essence of myself and that importance of I'm still here. I've had to have countless surgeries. I've had to have countless help with, you know, doctors and nurses in terms of my health, my mental health, and trying to stay positive and be positive. It gets hard. It still is quite hard. Every day is a different day, and every day brings something else. So at the moment, I am still recovering. I've done a makeup course, and just how to do hair and media makeup, how to do fashion and photography, camouflage, body painting, stuff like that. It was really, really exciting. I would love to have my own makeup line. That is my goal. I've learned so much over the years from doing my own makeup as being a burn survivor, and it's something that I would love, love, love to share with others. I'm learning that we all have insecurities, we all have problems, we all have things that were the hurdles we're trying to overcome, and to just keep going and keep striving and take each day as it comes. There's going to be bad days, there's going to be good days. And just make sure you have someone to speak to when you do feel down, and when you feel good, make sure you uplift others too. And I guess I'm having a good day, so I hope this message uplifts somebody. I really do hope so. I share my story because I think it's a powerful story, and it's a story for me about survival and having to survive in this world, being a young Black woman and being a burn survivor and having to deal with everyday, day-to-day situations, people staring. In the past, it was people making comments, just having to get through day-to-day life, even just with me, myself, and I, like my health. And you know, your health is your wealth, and I just want people to take care of themselves. I want other burn survivors to keep telling their stories, and I love listening to them. They empower me, and I hope this is my story empowers them too, and everybody else. I have forgiven Mary for what she's done. I just want to move on with my life and be the best that I can be. My advice for anyone that's at a low point from being a burn survivor is to just look at your scars and understand that you have overcome so much and you will keep overcoming, and that God has something planned, especially for us burn survivors, especially where everything is so physical. I think it's a great way to be able to tell your story, but not just tell your story, but have people feel it with you. They can see the scars, and scars are beautiful. I've had to learn that my scars are beautiful, and burn survivor scars are beautiful, and I've had to see the beauty in these scars. Beauty definitely is within the beholder.
Thank you for tuning in to No Tears for Black Girls, now a part of the Alive Podcast Network, the first Black female-owned and operated network dedicated to amplifying Black voices. If you enjoyed this episode, please show your support by following us on the Alive Podcast app, available on both iPhone and Android. You can also stay connected with us on social media and YouTube at No Tears for Black Girls, or on X at No Tears for BG. Remember to stay loved, stay blessed, and stay safe. Until next time.